Welcome along to the show this afternoon. And, of course, if you're not to get to him, by the way, can I just mention, we're slightly late today. We had a few technical difficulties thanks to, I suppose we could blame God for this one, really. Yes, the thunder and lightning is playing havoc with all sorts of technology all over the country at the moment. If you are anywhere at the moment and there's a lot of thunder and lightning around, my advice to you is to stay indoors because it is pretty bad today. And according to the weather forecast, it's going to get a lot worse. Now, we've a lot to get through today, but I do want to concentrate and focus on one thing, which is a border poll or a referendum, as Leo Varadkar calls it. A border poll would probably be defeated if held now, according to Leo Varadkar. The Taoiseach said that if it was held and lost, it would leave a wake of division in the north and calls for reunification, which would likely fall off the agenda for years, citing examples in Republican Australia and Quebec and Canada. He says, I don't think it'd be a good idea, certainly not at this point in time. He said, despite stating that he would like to see a united Ireland, I think the difficulty with the border poll is it would certainly be divisive in Northern Ireland, but it would also be probably defeated in Northern Ireland. Now, he said, if you look at the Good Friday Agreement, it says to make provision for a border poll, makes provision for a referendum of unification, but it says in the Good Friday Agreement that it should only happen when there's actually a stage when Northern Ireland has formed the opinion that it actually might pass. In other words, if the climate is there for it. And I want to know what you think. Do you believe there should be a border poll or a referendum on a united Ireland, if that's the way you want to word it, if that's the way you're comfortable wording it? Let us know. The number, as usual, 085 100 2255. We want to get your calls as well. That's 085 100 2255. Joining me as well is Malachy Steenson, solicitor and political contributor. Malachy, good afternoon to you. And also I have Gerry Carlisle, who is with us as well. Gerry is the Chief Executive of Future Ireland. Good afternoon to you too, Gerry.
Good afternoon, Matt.
Gerry, are you there? Can you hear me okay?
Oh. Yes, good afternoon.
Now, first of all, Gerry, I'll come to you first. In relation to the comments by Leo Varadkar, is he kind of making sense that, sure, if we do it now and it fails, well, then we're not going to get another run at it for another while. So what's the point in doing it now? Because according to the Good Friday Agreement, the climate must be there in the first place for a positive action.
Well, thanks for having me on. Now, I think that really we're starting from the wrong point. I actually don't know anybody who wants to have a referendum tomorrow. I don't think that's the point. I don't think that's the question that we're currently trying to deal with. What we're trying to deal with is getting the government to a stage where they're going to plan and prepare for a referendum that according to many of the experts, you know, including people like Professor Brendan O'Leary and even Bertie Ahern, they believe that that a referendum will be held sometime towards the end of this decade, so around 2030. So nobody's asking for a referendum tomorrow. Really what we need is a process of planning and preparing. And in our view, in the view of Ireland's future, really what we need is the government to step up to the plate and to really grasp that process of planning and preparing in advance of a referendum.
I mean, he believes it'll be defeated at the moment. That, I suppose, is a sticky point. And let me just come to Malachy Steenson in relation to that. Malachy, do you believe it would be defeated if there was a border poll?
Well, let's look at what a border poll actually is. And the person who makes the determination on whether the majority in the six-county state that is likely to vote for to leave the United Kingdom is the British Secretary of State in the north. Nothing to do with the Irish government. Nothing to do with what the people in the 26 counties vote for. So the sole decision is with the people of the six-county state, which is the whole reason that it was set up in the first place as a six-county part of Ulster rather than a nine-county Ulster. Now, let's be very clear. Leo Varadkar and Fine Gael have no interest in either the reunification of this country or the withdrawal of British interference in our island. And they've been very clear on that since 1922 when they
What you're doing there is you're talking about something that's historical. You cannot compare what Leo Varadkar, what Simon Coveney, what Micheál Martin are thinking right now compared to the men and the women of 1922. I mean, there just isn't. No, there isn't. No, but there isn't the same mindset. That's a ridiculous analogy.
It is the very same mindset, because in 1922, those who voted for partition were the very same people who would have rejected the rising and would have accepted home rule. Today, they're prepared to cede sovereignty to everything except the parliaments, either in the north or in the south. And I mean, that's the reality. Leo Varadkar shows no allegiance to this state or the northern state. His sole allegiance is now to the European Union. And what we talk about reunification.
That's a little bit unfair. On numerous occasions, he has mentioned the border poll in quite a positive, by the way, in the last 4 or 5 years.
A border poll is the reinforcement through the Good Friday Agreement of the Unionist veto. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, this pussyfooting around whether we have a border poll or not is entirely irrelevant. The Irish Republic of the nation state of 32 counties is sacrosanct. It's not up to any generation of Irish people to determine the layout of the island. So it's nothing. Imagine in this state now, I don't believe that with the current change of the demographics of this state, and as we move towards 2030, when Bertie Ahern and people say we should have this referendum, that the demographics and this change in citizenship in this country will lead us to a bigger defeat on this issue rather than bringing us closer.
Okay, and Gerry, that's a fair point. Ireland has changed quite substantially, particularly the Republic of Ireland, which has become quite liberal in its views. Northern Ireland, still reasonably conservative in its views. But then there's also the financial aspect of it as well. And would many people, I suppose, across the land, across the island of Ireland, be interested in sharing those resources? Because let's be clear about it, the Republic of Ireland is in a much better financial state than the North of Ireland currently at the moment. The North of Ireland, we don't know the exact figure, but it seems to vary year from year. The latest figures suggest where is the figure here? The latest figure was 15 million. Actually, it does say here the largest increase in the expenditure in the UK for a year ending March 2021, Northern Ireland accounted for at least an amount of expenditure at 34.6 billion, an increase of 6.5 billion compared to the year before. So the real argument, Gerry, is could we afford it?
Well, I think that has been said for many years now. I think really when you, again, refer to the experts here, if you listen to the economists and the reports that have been coming from the ESRI in recent years, just over the course of the last 2 years, really, it really points to a scenario where it's not just a case that Ireland, in terms of a new 32-county state wouldn't survive or couldn't afford it. It would actually flourish. And I think if you consider all of the changes that have taken place right across southern society, and you see how stagnant northern society has remained, you do see the opportunities there. And it does become apparent to people that we have an opportunity to build something which could be really, really strong, really good, and could be one of the best small countries in the world, right across all the sectors, right across health, education.
But there's so many, but Gerry, there is so many complications around that. Let's take one of those things you just mentioned, which is health. As we all know, in Northern Ireland, nobody pays for a doctor, nobody pays for a prescription, and nobody pays for healthcare. In Ireland, we pay through the nose for it, unless you've got private health insurance. So you have two options. Everybody gets it for free, or we suddenly start charging people in Northern Ireland 50 quid to visit a doctor and, you know, 30 quid for their prescription or whatever it is. They'll never put up with that, and we're certainly not going to put up with paying for it. So all of those complications would take years to work out. VRT tax, VAT, income tax, everything is different. And not only that, a large percentage of the population in Northern Ireland are employed by the state, the civil service in both mainland UK for Her Majesty's Royal Majesty's Civil Service, and you also got people working for the Northern Irish Civil Service in North of Ireland. They would all be out of a job. We would have to employ them within the civil service of Ireland. I don't know if there'd be enough jobs to go around. So there's a lot of complications that would take a lot of time.
It can't be that they would be out of a job and they would work for a new civil service. So it has to be one or the other, really. But I think that now we can be defeatist about this, or we can use this as an opportunity to build something brilliant. The reality is the North is, it's not sustainable as it currently stands. The argument about 50-year-old to visit the doctor is a sound enough argument if you base it on the current scenario. What we want to do is build something better. In the North, for instance, we have 500,000 people on waiting lists at the moment. You know, we've we 400 doctors are resigned from the doctor register in the UK. 15% of GPs in the north are handing their contracts back. That's not sustainable. We've no new schools getting built in the north. We've no new infrastructure. I mean, you're looking at things being introduced here that simply won't allow people to live a life of a reasonable standard of living in the north. Now, there's too high a proportion of the population that can't afford to pay for things anymore. They want something new. And what you're seeing now is more and more people within the north who are ready and prepared to have this conversation and to make their lives better in the context of a new and united Ireland. But that needs government support. You know, with increasing disparity in levels of pay between, let's say, you know, the UK and the south of Ireland, people, if you live in Uri and you're a school teacher, you're looking a few miles across the border and you see someone who earns 10,000 euro more than you. If you're in Uri and you're in the PSNI, you're looking at a guard in Dundalk who earns 10,000 euro more than you also. So, I mean, right across society here, and again, don't believe me, believe the ASRI on this, the experts.
Well, but you're also looking at a situation where the cost of living in Uri is cheaper.
Let me finish this point. Sorry, now, let me finish this point, and I'm just about to address that. Across the board, if you look at the economic indicators, that pound for pound, euro for euro, you actually have much more money in your pocket if you're living in the 26 counties than if you live in the 6 counties. And again, if you don't believe any of that, go to the
It's not that I don't believe it, Jerry. With respect, Jerry, I have personal experience.
I need to finish this point. I need to finish this point. And I'm not talking about if you don't believe it. I'm talking about if one doesn't believe it. If one doesn't believe all of that, go to the big determinant, the big measure, and that is life expectancy. Right now, if you live in the 26 counties, you will live 2 years longer than if you live in the 6 counties. That is not sustainable. There is something that's going to have to be done.
And that's a very fair point. Okay, that's a very fair point. Maliki, you know, we all want a bright future. I would love, and I think everybody would love, the idea of a one Ireland island. But of course, there are complications that come with that. I mean, it's all well and good to have the dream, but maybe Leo Varadkar is right, to some degree, that maybe now is not the time to do it. I mean, Jerry has pointed out quite a lot of things there in relation to the cost of living, in relation to the difference in wage, the disparity between wages, and I see that all the time, particularly with the civil service. Your civil service in Northern Ireland, a lot of them get paid minimum wage. That wouldn't be happening in the south. And realistically, you know my personal situation. I spend most of my time in Northern Ireland now. And, you know, and I pop up and down to the south every now and again. But I can see that the days of living in Northern Ireland much cheaper than living in the south are long gone, because diesel is more expensive in Northern Ireland. Electricity is equally as expensive. Your shopping basket is equally as expensive. The only thing maybe would be drugs would be a little bit cheaper, paracetamols and stuff like that. But generally, it's in and around the same price, if not even more expensive than living in the south. So how do you bind all that together and keep everybody happy? Because that is going to be a really difficult task. And Northern Ireland, as we know, doesn't have a huge amount of industry at this moment in time.
That's the challenge that faces us. But it's not simply a case of taking a dysfunctional northern state and attaching it onto a more dysfunctional southern state. We want to create a new Ireland, one where we have a government and we have a political class that's actually concerned about the welfare of its people. And you talked about the health service. I mean, the health service in this country needs to be totally taken apart and rebuilt.
We've said that for 25 years.
And for longer. And the one common factor we have in the highest offices in this state is that they have all been ministers for health at some stage, whether it's Micheál Martin or Varadkar or Harris or whoever. And we even see today, we can't even build, yet again, tens of millions more in cost to build a simple hospital in inner city Dublin. Beggars believe that nothing in this country works and nothing
Why do you think, and with respect, Jerry, as well, and by the way, I'm with you both. I would love that future for the next generation of children coming into Ireland, of this wonderful united geographical country that we all live happily in great harmony. And by the way, can I also point out that there was a recent survey that pointed out that many people in Northern Ireland consider themselves Northern Irish. And here it is here. Half of the population of Northern Ireland describe themselves neither unionist nor nationalist, according to research. They call themselves basically Northern Irish. Now, they will be mainly young people who don't consider themselves to be on either side of this. And maybe what they're looking for is an independent state of Northern Ireland. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that was the position of the UDA. You know, but I don't accept that there's any legitimate state called Northern Ireland. There is Ireland. There's a partition state of the six county state, which is under British control at the minute. And we want to see an end to that. But what we need in this country are politicians whose vision extends beyond the next election, whose vision is beyond their own personal careers, that their vision is beyond what somebody in Europe thinks of them. We need to look and we, in some sense, need to become somewhat insular and decide what is best for the people on all of this island, and create a new Ireland where all of our people are entitled and receive the best education possible, the best healthcare possible, the best standard of living possible with the resources that we have. And it seems that we are incapable of creating a political class who are prepared to look beyond.
And why do you think that's going to change? How do you possibly believe that's going to change? The political class, all that'll change is the names. You know, it'll do exactly the same thing. I mean, what happens at the next election? Sinn Féin maybe get in with a sprinkling of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, possibly, I don't know. I mean, nothing is going to change. Let's be clear about it. Sinn Féin are incapable of running a government in Northern Ireland. So what capability will they have in the South?
If we look at the provisionals, you know, who spent 30 years involved in a war in which 3,500 people died to end British rule in the northeast of Ireland, and now they're committed to implementing British rule, and not alone that, when they can't even get the puppet parliament in Stormont up and running, they run to the British government and demand that they bring in legislation which the people in the north, by and large, didn't want and were never asked about in relation to abortion, for instance, or anything else that suits them. What I would do immediately with the puppet government in Stormont is to stop all the salaries. And that would soon get them back.
Okay. Well, let me go back to Jerry. Let me go back to Jerry on that. Jerry, you know, in the northeast of the country, as Malachy calls it, or Northern Ireland, as it's affectionately known, I mean, they're incapable of even getting an executive together, their own government together. I mean, what possible chance have we got of communication and organising a united Ireland when we're incapable of, A, running the Republic of Ireland properly? We've seen numerous governments fail miserably. We can see what's happening in the south at the moment. And in Northern Ireland, they can't even get a government together. So what possible chance have we got?
Well, we don't have a great chance now if the government in the south don't start to plan and prepare. If you see something coming at you in a number of years, then in any walk of life, you get yourself ready for it and you become more robust and you work out what your various permutations and scenarios are and you are ready for what's coming at you. In this instance, it's very, very clear that at the very least, a referendum, a border poll, is coming at us probably in the next decade. So why wouldn't a government in the south get ready for that and plan for that and avoid a Brexit Mark II scenario? You spoke about identity earlier, and that's fine, but identity is dealt with largely in the Good Friday Agreement. This is now about sovereignty and about the way people are governed and what's best for all of the people, regardless of their identity or regardless of their background. So I'm Irish. I'm an Irish person, an Irish citizen, and I live in the north and I'm ruled from London. So there is no reason why someone can't maintain their British identity in a new and united Ireland and have access to a British passport and access to many of the same rights that I'm entitled to as an Irish citizen. That's when we know that a new and united Ireland is working, when it values our British Unionist, Loyalist, Orange, Protestant friends, neighbours, work colleagues, when it values all of those people.
But where do they fit in? Well, hang on. In this dream of the future that all three of us might have, Where does that fit? Where does their identity fit in? So you're a loyalist. You have a British pass. Not you personally, but you're a person is loyalist, has a British passport. And all of a sudden, you know, Ireland becomes a united Ireland. Let's just say, for argument's sake, where do they fit into that? And we have to be fair to those, that generation of people that are now there, have made a life there, who are living there and have always lived there, and generations of family have living there, but identify as British. So how do you solve that problem?
So again, that requires a process of planning and preparing. It requires a process of speaking to people. So Ireland's future have been asking the government in Dublin to prepare some type of citizens' assembly, an all-Ireland citizens' assembly, bring people together, invite them together, civic society, trade organisations, trade unions, ordinary people, bring them together. It mightn't necessarily be the exact format of a current citizens' assembly as it exists in the south at the moment, which is 99 people drawn at random from the electoral register. This would need to be tweaked, and it would need to be more, because it needs to be people from Cork to Coleraine. It needs to be people speaking about what their vision for the future is, regardless of their background. So even if you are an ideological Irish Republican, or if you are a confirmed, committed unionist and loyalist, regardless of your view on any of this, we have to live together on this issue.
And I couldn't agree more. And I don't believe it's for you, Jerry, or it's for Maliki, or for me to even decide for the future, for future generations. Yes, we can do the logistics as more mature and political people. We can do the logistics of it. But I think the people that we really need to listen to are those 20-year-olds. It's their world. It's their future.
So it's up to a government to convene those type of forums. So before Brexit, just after Brexit, there was the All Ireland Civic Forum on Brexit, and the Dublin government convened that, and they invited all of the various interested parties because they realised that this was something that needed to be dealt with on a 32-county basis, that we needed to speak to everybody on the island. We need to get back to something like that in advance of a referendum that is going to be... we are going to reach a stage over the course of probably the next 7 or 8 years or whenever that might be, when a referendum will be undeniable. You're going to have this border poll, this referendum. Why not do the hard yards now? And it will require a government in Dublin to do those hard yards. There is no other organisation, statutory agency, body that can actually do that work other than a government in London, a government in Dublin, and having worked with and spoken to a government in London.
Okay, finally, just Maliki. Just to come back to that again, okay, and I don't disagree. I know you're not a fan of citizens' assemblies, Maliki, because as far as you're concerned, they have done a great job in the south of Ireland. But I do understand what Jerry is saying.
To deliver the message that the government wants. And the one thing that the Brexit forums didn't look at was whether Ireland should have an Ireland exit. And I believe that we should take our sovereignty back from both.
But the people of Northern Ireland already voted in a previous Brexit and didn't want to leave the European Union anyway.
But the people of the North voted to remain part of the United Kingdom under the Good Friday Agreement, which you all support, which I have continually been opposed to. But the first thing that the British government or the Irish government needs to do is to demand from the British government a date for their disengagement from the affairs of Ireland. And that's the root cause of all of this problem. And if they do that, then we can move towards establishing how we run.
Then just finally, listening to both of you today, and I'm not disagreeing with everything both of you are saying. I disagree with some of the points that you both make. But in relation to what Leo Varadkar is saying, and yes, by the way, I do realise there's an election coming soon, and he's saying things, obviously, he's preaching to the choir here, isn't he? And he's preaching to the public gallery.
But Leo Varadkar will be in Europe by the time the next election comes.
Probably. But maybe he will, I don't know. But in saying that, what he says is essentially the truth. And I think you're both in some way agreeing with that, that we got to get it ready before you even go down that road. Because you don't want to get it wrong. Because if we get it wrong, we're not coming back to it for a long time, maybe for another generation.
As I said, Noel, I don't believe that there's any need for a referendum. The proclamation of the Irish Republic and the first Dáil set out the parameters.
You couldn't do it without a referendum, Maliki. Maliki, that would be daft. Legally, you probably could, actually. Legally, you could.
You need Well, you see, the Good Friday Agreement says, and if that's your Bible, it says...
It's not my Bible, I'm just saying.
It's up to the people in the north. So the people in the south have no say. So what's the point of having a referendum in the 26 counties if it doesn't have any persuasive...
Well, by the way, personally speaking, I believe it affects the people of the north more than it affects the people of the south, apart from that financial aspect. So I do believe, by the way, it is more up to the people of the north, because they're the ones who are going to be left holding the chalice, of course, if it becomes United Ireland. And by the way, it's not going to be a big deal for those who are nationalists. Yeah, but it's not going to be, I mean, if it's won and declared as an All-Ireland Ireland, it's not going to really affect those people who are nationalists or those people who might be stuck in the middle somewhere, but it is going to affect those people who consider themselves to be British, because they don't want to be living on the island of Ireland if they consider themselves British. Some of them would be happy enough to do it. So I think everybody has to take into consideration. No, I think what Jerry said is a fair point.
What we should all realise, Niall, is it's the quality of life that will influence those people. And if they can be assured of a better quality of life in an All-Ireland that's run for the betterment of its people rather than the betterment of certain sections, then you will see a huge switching. You can see, you know, the difference in opinion and unionists in the North since Brexit. And what we should be striving to do is to actually get the debate going here about removing ourselves from the European Union and from the British.
I think you're overstating that, because don't get me wrong, I would have a, I like to have a debate in relation to it. I do think there's arguments on both sides. But Malik, I tell you now, if you had a referendum tomorrow for Ireland to leave the EU, it wouldn't be happening.
Well, you told us that, Niall, during Lisbon and I think Maastricht, when on both occasions where there was an expansion of European power to mandate, the Irish people rejected both of those referendums and were brought back. On one case by Albert Reynolds coming back with 40
to vote again. Yeah, I know. Okay.
Okay.
Just out of
that's the reality. And there's no doubt that if this proposed referendum in relation to United Ireland doesn't give the right result for the political class, if the people both turn around and say they want a United Ireland, then you will find that they'll be, running that referendum again.
Okay, Jerry, just a final point, Jerry. I'll just let you have a final point just before I finish this.
Yeah, well, I think that you have to look, and we go back to the start of the change in nature of society right across the island. But, you know, there is definitely now an emerging a group of people in the north who are going to be pivotal when it comes to the referendum. And they it appears now that they seem to be of a mind to gravitate more than All-Ireland approach. And we need to be very, very mindful and keep an eye on this section of people. But they realise, you know, that things like trade, enterprise, health, the sharing of data, infrastructure, financial institutions, et cetera, all work better to the benefit of citizens when they're approached from an All-Ireland perspective. And that the crux of all of this is that we will be better as a people right across the island, particularly in the north, if we are able to govern ourselves in a government based in Ireland for the people of Ireland and not ruled from London in the year 2023. Let's get this sorted. Let's ensure that we have a referendum over the course of the next decade, and let's go out and win the referendum handsomely.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed, Jerry. Thank you very much indeed, Malachy Seans. I appreciate both of you coming on the air and talking to me today. Now, I want to take your calls and let me know what you think. You can WhatsApp right now on 085 100 2255. I want you to imagine yourself. You're in a polling booth and you've a voting card in your hand and they're asking you, would you like to see United Ireland? Of course, the answer is yes. Everybody's going to say yes. But before you say yes, you have to take into consideration all the complications involved in that. And there are many complications involved in that, including the financial aspect of it. I mean, could we afford it? Can we give jobs to everybody in Northern Ireland? I mean, realistically, 1.7 million people, I don't know how many of those are working population, but they all need jobs because many of them currently work for the state, the UK state. They will no longer be working there. Will we have enough civil service jobs to go around? Will we have a free health service for everybody? Or are we suddenly going to start charging everybody in Northern Ireland for a health service? What will happen to prices? As we know, many of the prices in the north are lower than they are in the south. Will they all go up? Will the wages and the salaries in the north go up, or will the wages in the south come down to match them? What's going to happen? How do you work all the logistics of that out? It is extremely complicated. But would you vote yes? Or are you happy just to leave the status quo and the way it is at the moment? Let me know what you think. The number is 085 100 2255. Now, let me go to Munarazi. I think I'm pronouncing his name wrong anyway, but that's neither here nor there. But he's going to correct me now and tell me how to pronounce his name. And I do apologize. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Neil. How are you?
Pronounce your own name for me there, please, because I don't want to get it wrong.
You did pronounce it well, I believe, but the right way of pronouncing it is Munyaradzi.
Munyaradzi. Okay. Munyaradzi.
Yeah,
now,
correct.
I suppose, you know, I'm delighted to have you on first because you're not in Ireland a long time. You're originally from Nigeria, so you're looking from the outside in, so you see what's happening in Ireland. And do you believe we should have a united Ireland?
First things first, now I'm from Zimbabwe. I'm not from Nigeria.
I do apologize. You apologize?
That's okay. No offense. No offense. No offense. None taken. Yeah. So I've been here in Ireland for about 2 years. I'm in my third year now. So I don't really have much. I'm still studying of why in the first place Ireland was split. Like we have Northern Ireland and then we have Republic of Ireland. But yeah, I would vote if it will improve the lives of the ordinary people, I will vote for a united island. That's it.
Mm. See, when you say it would improve the lives, I think it would certainly improve the lives of the people of Northern Ireland. I don't know whether it would be much improvement of the people of the south of Ireland, because it's going to cost money. Northern Ireland, geographically, is quite big for the population. A lot bigger. There's a less dense population in Northern Ireland with the 1.7 million people. Hence, then, you have a situation where you don't have as many places to work for people. There isn't as many jobs. There's higher unemployment rate. And you've also got a situation, you know, whereby a lot of people work for the British government, which the British government are currently paying somewhere between, well, I used to think the amount was around 15 to 20 billion, but according to this, it's 34 billion. To basically subsidise Northern Ireland because it doesn't make any money. Ireland, that would be nearly half of what we take in taxes in this country. So it would cost a substantial amount of money. And I don't know if that's going to hit the pockets of the Irish taxpayer.
The thing, fair enough. Now, I hear what you're saying here. But I wanted to know if it will hit more, because remember, it will be united now. So I wouldn't know if it will cost the Irish more. First things first, will they abandon the pound? Yes, they will abandon the pound.
Yes.
But yes, they will abandon the pound. So the factories, I don't know, talking about financially, also the unemployment rate, I don't know if that's why I was saying that. I've been like 2 years in Ireland. I wanted to study more of how is the employment rate in the north, and then how is the employment rate or the unemployment rate in the north and the unemployment rate in the south.
Well, so currently in the south, we have the lowest unemployment rate we've ever had in history, which is about 6%. And you're always going to have 6% because there's always going to be 6% of the population who don't want to work, who would rather sit on their arse and do nothing. So, but in Northern Ireland, the unemployment rate is a little bit higher. It's probably somewhere, I think of the last estimate, somewhere between 7 and 10%. So it is higher than it is here.
Okay, fair enough. So the employment, the unemployment rate, what about, like, also we have to have a look at the housing crisis here in the south compared to the housing, if there is housing crisis in the north, because I believe that here in the south, we are facing a major issue relating to the housing as well.
Well, I don't think it's anywhere near as bad. It's nowhere near as bad up north because houses are a lot cheaper up north.
That's where I was also going with my point, that won't it also help us with the housing crisis that we are facing? Because to clear this housing crisis that we are facing here in the south, I don't know how much of time it's going to take us to clear the housing crisis here compared if we have some of our people to move there in the north. You can help me there as well.
Well, it'll probably take forever to clear the housing crisis and the mess in this country currently at the moment, because it just seems to get worse as the days go on. But do me a favour, stay there for a second, Munyaradzi. Let me go to Morris.
Right.
And I'm sorry for getting where you came from wrong. I do apologise. Let me go to Morris.
Zimbabwe.
Morris, yeah. I mean, look, there's a man from Zimbabwe and even he's speaking sense. I mean, do we really need a united Ireland, or should we have a united Ireland, or is it completely financially off the cards?
How are you, Noel? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, yeah.
Grant, no bother. Yeah, I'm just having a little bit of an issue with the speaker on this phone, but I have my earphones in. Yeah, I can understand, all right. But like I was saying to one of your researchers there earlier on, I had a visit to Bail Ferrishta on Saturday. I was in Belfast, yeah?
Yep.
And I was visiting some friends that have gone from Dublin to live back in Belfast. And I had a good day up there, and we went around and we done a little bit of walk here and there. And on my way back, I believe in travelling up one way and come back another way. So you're seeing different things.
Yeah.
So I drove from Belfast down and I hit Logan. I've never been to Logan before.
Okay.
My Jesus, I couldn't believe it. I thought I was outside Buckingham Palace. Flags, buntings. I know the king has just been elected. But there was a very poignant sign in the village and it said, "Fear God, honour the king."
Yeah. I know there are still. I mean, I spend all my time up here now. There are places where they would be very, I suppose, loyalist areas, and there were a lot of nationalist areas. Now, not the way it would have been back in the 1970s, not as much,
no.
But there are still those areas that would be dominated by. In every house window, you would see pictures of the Queen or the King. And as you rightly said, you know the British flag hanging, you know, from poles everywhere. And you're going to see a lot more of that in the next month when you come up to the July fortnight. Of course, you'll see it everywhere.
Marching season. And one of the things that it struck me when I went and had a look around and I was seeing stuff and I went into Banbridge and that's more or less same, a minor Logan, you know. So I'd never been to areas like that where most things...
And the lovely areas, by the way.
I did walk in Belfast, by the way, a good few years back. And I was carrying out walk in an area in Belfast where the pavements were painted red, white and blue. And this middle-aged lady came up to me. I told you this before. And she said, "What the F are you doing in my country, you Fenian bastard?" Because I was driving a Dublin Reds van.
Well, see,
and I was with a Belfast. I was with a Belfast guy. And he says, "Hey, you, it's my effing country too. F off."
And you know, those kind of situations are quite rare. As you know, I'm 6 years up here now. And those situations where people will say something to you are extremely rare now. I mean, that just really doesn't happen very much anymore.
Well, like I said, I was aware. I was driving a Southern Reds vehicle, a commercial vehicle, and I was quite well aware that I was in an area that, would be brought to people's attention. You know, I felt really... Actually, I didn't feel uncomfortable. I felt intimidated by it.
Yeah.
Because of all the stuff and that, you know. But like I said to you, Niall, I do me a little bit of history, and James the Fourth was the man who took over Ireland, and when he realised that the Irish... peasants were loyal papists to Rome, he decided from 1600 to 1640 up to the 1700s to put people in that would be loyal to the crown.
So do you reckon Leo the First, Leo Varadkar the First, do you reckon he's going to manage to get them all back together again?
Yeah, exactly. And I was just looking at it and I was saying to myself, but you know what, if the people of Ireland, of the island of Ireland, wanted to vote for a united Ireland, I would definitely, in a heartbeat, vote for the United Ireland.
Okay, well, hang on. Stay there for a second. Let me go to Melissa as well. Melissa, how are you doing? You're on the Niall Boylan podcast.
Good day. How are you?
Good day.
Just first and foremost, this is not the time. And I'm very much for an All-Ireland United Ireland, absolutely. But not under the circumstances we find ourselves in today. Absolutely not. And I suppose that...
And what's holding you back from that? What's holding you back?
I would have to say we need a referendum first on getting out of the EU, 100%.
That's not going to happen, Melissa.
I think, why would anyone want to lose their punts? I've spoken to many in the North from all different corners all over the last couple of years. We did make contact with many. And the Eurozone is in crisis. We're down 8.80% in the Euro.
Absolutely. But I'm telling you now, Melissa, there's no appetite for what you're saying. If we had a referendum tomorrow on should Ireland leave the EU, I genuinely believe it would be defeated overwhelmingly. It would not happen.
I don't think so, because we're being shut down all the time from speaking about this. We're the net contributors. We have the largest national debt of 239 billion.
But what you're saying to me, but hang on, no, I just let me just stick to what we're talking about in the United Ireland. We're going into Ireland and air exit. But here's the thing: the people of Northern Ireland, if you want a United Ireland, they voted to stay in the EU.
No, they didn't all vote to stay in the EU.
Well, not all of them, but the majority of people in Northern Ireland did. It didn't pass
in
Northern Ireland
before COVID, and now to what has happened. in every corner. We need to start having this conversation again, Niall, and it needs to be had. We're the largest net contributors to the EU. Our Eurozone...
per head of population, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, we all our trade is with the UK. We actually have 33.9% of trade with the UK, 30.8% with the US. Like, the only reason we entered the EU in the first place was for free movement, small businesses. You can forget about the small businesses. They're all after collapsing. Our tourism, the single market. We don't need to be here. We can have a united Ireland outside of the EU. Oppressor.
I'm just curious. Morris, if you were asked to vote to leave the European Union tomorrow, would you?
If I what?
If you were asked to vote to leave the European Union tomorrow, would you leave the European Union?
No, I wouldn't leave the European Union tomorrow, but I'd definitely vote for United Ireland.
See, Melissa, there you go.
No.
Well, he doesn't realise that we're paying out more than what we're getting. You know, they're deciding on our budget. We have absolutely no
I am not suggesting for a minute we haven't lost our sovereignty. We absolutely have. We're not even allowed to make our own rules and decisions anymore. I couldn't agree
absolutely.
With you more.
And
but that's what we signed up for. We signed up for the United States of Europe, didn't we?
But we can at any time leave that. And
of course we can.
Under the treaty, can withdraw. And like at the end of the day, did everyone go into this EU business? Now, I voted no twice, actually.
Yeah.
And... for the Lisbon Treaty. So let's go back, because we need to go back.
Well, no, I don't want to go back today, because we could do a debate again on leaving the EU, because it's going to just take up an awful lot of time. Let's just stick to focus what we're talking about. Would you vote for a united Ireland if you got your dream of leaving the EU?
I'm under the EU, no. Not under the EU.
Not
no.
under the EU.
Under our own sovereign government, I would, yes.
Okay, well, stay there for a second. Let me go as well to John. How you doing, John?
How are you doing, Niall?
John, would you vote for united Ireland?
And if it was my accent, I think I would have to.
I think you might. Yeah, I wouldn't know exactly where you're from your accent, but I can tell it's certainly up north anyway.
I would, out of patriotic duty, I probably would. Well, I don't know if it's the right thing or the wrong thing to do presently.
And what makes you think it might be the wrong thing to do?
I would have to look to what I would call them my brothers and sisters in the north of Ireland. It's a lot better country presently under the Brexit deal that they have achieved. Great little country now. Mm-hmm. Much cheaper to live in, better health service, better education system, better cars, higher spec cars, cheaper tax, cheaper insurance. The nationalists were always living in a poor lifestyle. What they vote
but hang on, Kevin, I want to just intervene. You're saying that with all these things are cheaper. You know, I'm living in the north, so I know what it's like. They're not that much cheaper, and the wages are a lot lower in Northern Ireland. So it kind of balances
out. So is your property.
But so is property prices, absolutely. Well, depending on where you live. Mind you, you can get cheap property in the Republic of Ireland as well if you want to live out in the middle of nowhere. You know, if you want to live in Carlow, for example, John, you can get reasonably cheap property. You know, or you want to live in Leitrim or Athlone or Wexford, or, well, maybe not Wexford, is a little bit expensive. But if you want, you know, if you want to live in the middle of the country somewhere, you get reasonably cheap property. You know.
So why have we all our people traveling up to the north for healthcare then, Niall? You know what I mean? They have to go up to get cataracts done up the north from down here.
We couldn't afford them. I'm not going to lie to both of you. It's a great healthcare system, but we couldn't afford that. We just couldn't afford it.
But then would the nationalists of, this is my point, would the nationalist community vote to join, which is a shattered system down here? It's not even broken, it's in smithereens.
It's in smithereens, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like that's I had this argument in the Rock Bar in Belfast, probably one of the most ex-IRA pubs was ever created. I had this, not an argument, but a debate. I said, when you go in behind the curtain and mark your, it's an X up there, it's not the system we have down here. When you go in behind that curtain, hand and heart, what would you vote for? Would you give up what the system is here? Like, there's 15 billion pumped into the north before another penny is generated.
Because I'm living in both, I can see the pros and cons. Do you know what I mean?
I just think I would have to agree with that lady, what she said, a united Ireland under Europe, especially what we see, like we basically, we're soon going to be eating crickets. We're going to be told what to do. And the United Ireland under that system doesn't seem the United Ireland that many people die for.
Okay, I'm looking. There was a recent breakdown, by the way, in restaurants, supermarkets of the cost of living, right? Just to give you a little bit of an example. An inexpensive meal in a restaurant for one person in Dublin would cost you €17.53 in Belfast for the same meal, right? So it's a little bit cheaper. McDonald's, which is your convenience meal, in Dublin, €10.760 in Belfast. That's not my experience, can I point out, by the way, which is 24% cheaper. I'm looking at, say, some things that are here. Actually, things like simple things like rice are more expensive in Northern Ireland than they are in the South. Toilet rolls are more expensive in the North than they are in the South.
There's a lot of rice.
Absolutely. I'm looking down here. The obvious ones, are, by the way, are utility bills. So the basics, electricity, heating, cooling, water, garbage, etc., etc. Annually, for a single-bedroom apartment, €243 per year in Dublin, €143 in Belfast. So there's a big disparity between that. Mobile phones as well, a lot cheaper. Internet is a little bit cheaper. So generally, the cost of living is cheaper. So I'm not going to deny that. But realistically, when you're paid less, does that really matter? Because people are paid less.
The only argument that I am really putting up is when the nationals are definitely the unionists won't sign up for it. I think we all know that. But when the nationals go in behind the curtain to make that sign, will they sign up for a system that is shattered down here and a government that practically, I'd say, 70% of the country hate? Like, will they want to join that regime? It's like the people you've seen public consultation committees there advising the government, totally ignored. Even the North won't be ignored so as quickly.
Okay, well, do me a favour. Stay there for a second. Let me go to Norman as well. Norman McCormick. How are you doing, Norman?
Hello, Niall. How are you doing?
Nice to talk to you, Norman. Hi. Would you vote yes? I understand the points that John is making as a man who spends time in both. Would you vote yes for a United Ireland?
I think it makes economic sense and logistic sense, and I feel sorry for the nationalists. But as a person from a mixed marriage, I certainly want to have nothing to do with the unions or the DUP. So,
well, you're going to have to if you vote for United Ireland, because you have to become their brothers and friends.
So unfortunately, I'm very sorry for my fellow nationalists in the North. I'd have to vote no, because I don't, like what happened to many mixed marriages, Protestants or Catholics who ended up dead.
But you're looking at 40 years ago. That's not the case now.
No, the UVF is still very active, and the way they...
I know, but there's mixed marriages. There's mixed marriages in Northern Ireland now. Catholics marry Protestants all the time. It's not some sort of strange phenomenon anymore.
But the DUP are still very anti-Catholic. I think that
the tolerance level is different. There was a time when you came to Northern Ireland, particularly places that would be considered to be loyalist areas. And if you were from the South, you daren't open your mouth in case they realised you were from the South, you know, and you'd be given a hard time. Now, in 99% of places in Northern Ireland, you're very welcome.
I was up in Belfast there recently with my wife, coincidentally, for a cataract operation. And I couldn't get out there quick enough. I certainly wouldn't go near.
When you say you couldn't get out of there quick enough, what was wrong?
It was very depressing, actually. It wasn't very a nice area. And I was afraid to end up in a loyalist area of Belfast.
I've been all over Belfast, Newtownards, Dundonald, Bangor. And I have to say, in the 6 years I've been here, I've never had a bad experience. Maybe, but I
certainly, if you look at the DUP and their attitude towards Irish language, I mean, it's ridiculous that they want to have street signs in two languages, which is very common in other countries, also Wales and Scotland and Europe. But there's absolutely no toleration or respect for the Irish language or the Irish culture among the unions, especially the DUP community. I'd have nothing to do with them. Absolutely nothing. I think they're an albatross around our neck. Now, economically, I'm sure the British government should be compelled to pay $6 billion a year for the next, say, 40, 50 years. So that would cover the economic aspect of the issue. You know? They're paying, what, $6, $7 billion a year now or something into Northern Ireland? Or maybe $9
billion? It's a lot more than that. I'm looking here. By the way, I read it out, somebody couldn't believe it. I'm reading this here. I'm reading this online. This was the largest increase in expenditure for the UK for the year ending March 2021. Northern Ireland accounted for the least amount of expenditure at 34.6 billion.
Wow. Okay. So I think it's fair enough to, that Britain pays a sizable amount of money into United Ireland for the next, say, 50 years.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think they would have to. I think there would have to be an agreement where they continue to pay.
Subsidise it, yeah.
Absolutely. Let me just go to Stephen as well. Hang on, stay there. Stephen, how are you doing? Stephen, are you there? Oh, sorry, Stephen. I lowered you down. Sorry, Stephen, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, Stephen, would you be voting yes or no?
If you ask me in the morning, no. Okay. If after, you know, I when your researcher rang me, it was a case of... when Leo was talking about setting up a discussion panel to discuss unifying Ireland, he was attacked on basically every quarter, kind of going, oh, it's too early and what will happen and this will happen and won't happen and that happen. And now he's kind of going, well, I don't think it's quite right time. And he's still getting attacked for it. The whole idea of unifying Ireland is a brilliant idea. It sounds amazing.
Is it a bit of a fantasy?
We don't get a say in it.
Is it a bit of a fantasy?
Because it is a little bit.
So many complications.
Now, that's not to say it's impossible. It's absolutely a possible thing, and the way Northern Ireland has come along in the last 20 years, even brings them a lot closer to alignment with ourselves. But that's also because Northern Ireland has to pass laws that we pass down here as well as in the UK. But the majority of the system. Political and state systems in the north are completely and utterly dysfunctional. They spent more time under British rule in Westminster than they have in Stormont. And I don't see it becoming a thing maybe by the end of the decade. I think that's a good target, but I think it's realistically going to take at least 2 decades to win over the hearts and minds north and south. But as I said, the north are the people that will decide whether or not anything like this is going to happen at all, and a sympathetic Secretary of State.
I mean, realistically, there's so many complications involved, but my biggest complication, or my fear the biggest, the financial ones we can work out, okay? And Norman is right, by the way. If it happened, I think the British government would have to come to an arrangement whereby they continue to pay that subsidy for a period of time, whether a kind of weaning in period or weaning out period.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But my biggest concern is the loyalists, the unionists that live in Northern Ireland, who declare themselves as British, are now being told, you're not living in Great Britain anymore, you're now living in Ireland. That's not going to wash. No matter what way you dress that up, it's not going to wash. What happens to the national anthem? What happens to the currency? What happens to the flag, as the flag, as they call it, in the north? So what happens to all of those things that takes away their identity? They're not going to, none of that's going to wash. And my fear is we're back to square one, we're back to the 1970s, and we're back to people fighting about it.
Yeah, I think certainly for the next 10 years like that, it's going to be more of these kinds of back and forth arguments. No one's really going to get anywhere. There'll always be a financial worry or a societal worry. Simply because, and you're never going to win all of the hearts and minds in Northern Ireland, but bringing people around to an idea that this is much better for you than either working as your own executive or working under Westminster is the way I would like to see things going. If I was doing community work in Northern Ireland, I would be part of the massive team that are trying to build cross community relations, for the last, 20 odd years, because it's necessary. You can't be one side of a wall and hate the person on the other side of the wall and yet walk past each other every day to go to school or go to work,
But we got a situation where we have two dysfunctional governments. I mean, you've got the Irish government, who are clearly dysfunctional at the moment, are incapable of solving a housing crisis and a cost of living crisis. You've got a Northern Ireland, well, if you want to call them a government, you've got two parties incapable of forming a government or forming an executive and running a country or running a partition, as Malachy called it earlier on, properly. So what possible chance have they got of communicating together to form a single island government? None, if you ask me.
I think it's a very slim possibility. They're going to have to start where we are and talk about the things that we can agree on, and say, well, we'll use a when it would be like when we got the euro. There'll be a moment, there'll be a time of a year or two where there'll be a cross exchange rate and it'll be basic parity between the pound in the north and the euro. And, you know, schools will continue to be cross community and cross sectarian divides and all these other kinds of things. And all of these things are the easier things to iron out, you know?
I get you.
And then we can start, you know, on the hard stuff. The nub of the bigger things, yeah, you know?
The flag. The flag is going to be a big one. And the anthem. That's going to be a big one. Yeah, stay there for a second because you know there's as many bigots as around. Let me just go, if I can, to... stay there, Stephen. James, how you doing, James?
Afternoon,
Niall. Afternoon, James. Okay, you heard Stephen, and I think he makes a lot of sense. The idea is nice. It's a little bit of a fantasy. Now is probably not the right time to vote yes because it just wouldn't work. It's too early, too soon. We just don't have the appetite yet, and we're not in the proper position to do so either, I don't think.
No, Stephen does make a lot of sense, Niall. I think we do take the financial thing. Like, if it's going to cost $24 billion, and that's pounds, Niall, as well. That's not euros. So that's about $40 billion. You know, you have to say to yourself then, why would the British government want to get rid of that? They're still going to pay for something for the next 30 or 40 years. They kind of say to themselves, well, why would we bother? You know, we might as well just keep it because...
Well, they'll eventually get rid of it. Because, I mean, to them, it is a financial noose around the neck. And let's be clear about it. I mean, how often does Richie Sunak, or before that Boris Johnson, or before that whoever it was, visit Northern Ireland? I really don't think they care. I don't really think... Northern Ireland to them is probably an inconvenience to Westminster.
Well, I can guarantee you, if the EU turned around and said, well, tell you what, lads, from 2030, we'll pay for it, the Brits would say, yous can have it.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, it's like getting rid of a bad business, isn't it? A bad debt.
Yeah. What you mentioned, Niall, about the Troubles, right? A lot of the people who were involved in the Troubles in the 70s and the 80s, a lot of them are still knocking around on Niall. A lot of them would only be in their 60s and their 70s.
Some of them are. And by the way, there's some young people up there who are still quite bigoted, who have learned off their fathers and mothers, sadly, and who grew up with that bigotry. But I think they're few and far between, I'm going to be honest. And to both of you, I say this again, I spend 90% of my time there now. And I don't experience what people are telling me sometimes. I just don't experience. All I experience is people who are pleasant, welcoming and nice.
Well, I do be up the north quite often now because my kids are getting their braces done up there. So I'd be up there maybe 7-8 times a year crossing the border into Newry. And as someone mentioned, the costs, there's very, very little difference in the costs of food, alcohol. I don't smoke, you know. So, and fuel is more expensive in the north. So the north, like years ago, you know, you'd make the day trip up to Newry because it'd be worth it. But now
sure, it was worth going to the north just to fill your car years ago. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And so it's not cheaper in any way. And pleasant-wise, yeah, like any time I've been up there now, I've never, ever had a bad experience. If anything, I think people in the south could actually take a leaf out of customer service from Northern Ireland. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't disagree with you. No, I wouldn't disagree with you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I'm not just saying that because you're married to a Northern Irish lady.
I'm not. I'm actually married to a Dublin lady, but however, there you go. Yeah. But she happens to live in Northern Ireland.
Anytime, as I said, people go on about that, you know. But then again, Niall, as you mentioned it, with the younger bigots, if you want to call them that.
I'm losing your line there. I'm losing your line, James. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you actually said to somebody from the Shankill Road, why do you hate your neighbour from the road? They probably couldn't really give you...
Yeah, because my dad told me to hate them. That's usually, I mean, hatred is usually inherent, I would imagine. I'm sorry, I lost your line there. Stephen, I imagine, you know, in those small pockets where you still have sectarianism and you still have problems, that hatred that they have is just inherited, isn't it?
Absolutely. No one is born hating the person that they're next to or anything like that. It's all a learned thing. This is what, you know, community workers have been doing in Northern Ireland for the last 20-30 years or so, is trying to take down parts of the wall or build bridges and connections within the community, you know. And it's working, but it's not there yet. And I don't think anyone would say that it is. You know, the whole idea of bringing them back into the Republic is a nice idea. It's not impossible, but we're a long way off because we haven't actually taken it seriously. As much as Westminster couldn't give a flying monkeys about Northern Ireland The Republic doesn't give a flying monkeys about Northern Ireland either, not in any great way, shape or form.
There was a suggestion, and there still is a suggestion for many people, and I mentioned there a few minutes ago, there was research done by ARC, oh, I had it there a minute ago, but I think it suggested that up to 50%, oh yeah, half the population of Northern Ireland describe themselves as neither unionists nor nationalists, according to new research.
Mm.
In other words, young people describe themselves as Northern Irish. So there is a kind of appetite as well amongst young people to have a separate state, almost like Scotland or Wales, you know, to have a separate state under their own rule without anybody else. But that, I don't think that's financially possible, because you got to look at the population geographically, the size of the place. There isn't enough density. Mm. There isn't enough jobs. As I mentioned already, the majority of people in Northern Ireland work for the government. So realistically, if they stop being part of the United Kingdom, they're all without work.
Realistically, it is a generational thing. And you'll start seeing that over the next couple of generations. In reports saying that there are more people completely disaffected with the idea of Irishness or Britishness. But you have to kind of factor in, if the North becomes a republic, a self-contained independent republic, they have control of their own taxes. All of the taxation and everything like that is controlled by Westminster.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so they can set their own understandings of it in the same way that we can set our own understandings of it. And yes, if we take on the six counties, all of our laws immediately kick into effect in the North, you know, and then we can start measuring and balancing and weighing out things and changing things and bringing up cost of living or down cost of living and all these other kinds of things, you know.
Well, say that. Let me just bring in Michael, just the last caller on this. Michael, how are you doing? You're on the Niall Boylan podcast.
Hi, how are things?
Good. Michael, I'm hearing a lot of sense today from people who are not just jumping in on this and saying, oh, yeah, let's go for United Ireland. People, I suppose, are kind of agreeing with Leo Varadkar, which is quite strange. But then again, there is an election coming, so he's starting to make sense. I mean, they're kind of agreeing that maybe now is not the right time.
No, I mean, now is not the... It's like, let's not announce the border poll in the morning and then make everyone vote. But we absolutely have to start planning for the eventuality that there will be a border poll and the possibility of reunification. Like, this kind of stick our head in the sand and say, we're not ready. Because, like, people keep talking about how Britain do the mill around their neck and they'd be happy to get rid of it. But sure, it's up to, if they decide to call a border poll in the morning, then it goes to the polls in Northern Ireland. What happens if there's, now, it won't obviously be overnight that there'd be a yes vote, but in a few years' time, they do put it to the polls, there is a yes vote, maybe, then it's up to us to decide, and we haven't done any planning. We haven't had a discussion around it. We haven't... Like, we absolutely need to start having that discussion now.
How can we have a discussion now? Let's take simple things like healthcare, right? How can we have a discussion now about what we do with the healthcare system vis-a-vis the NHS, HSE? They don't pay, we pay. And who decides then? Are they all going to suddenly start paying, or are we going to get it for free? That decision has to be made. How can we do that when our healthcare system is currently in a mess? How can we decide on housing when our housing is in a mess? How can we decide on all those things when we can't even get it right in our own country in the first place?
I know, but we have to start planning for it. Like, South Korea have plans in place for the eventuality that they reunite with North Korea. Now, if they can plan for us, if they can have a discussion around it, then surely be to God,
anybody can. Yes, of course, I get what you mean. So if they can manage to do it, surely we can.
Well, yeah, at least a discussion and some, like, basically what we'd have to do is come up with a plan in the eventuality that, you know, nothing major changes. Like, it's okay, what happens if there is, in 5 years' time, a vote in, we'll say, the UK, UK or the Northern Irish Secretary calls a border poll, there's a yes vote, for whatever reason, because you don't know what, if there's disaffection with the Tories in Northern Ireland. So they vote yes, then it's up to us. And then we vote yes, because whatever the reason.
Yeah.
What happens then? Do we just be like, oh, we didn't plan for this? We have to have something in place.
My fear, and I'll say this to both Michael and Stephen, because I'm a little bit older than Stephen, but I think, Michael, I don't know how old you are, but you're close enough to my age probably anyway. But I'm sure you might remember the Troubles, Michael. Stephen probably doesn't, because he's a little bit younger. But I would hate to think that a border poll, if it was a yes vote, would set the wheels in motion for more trouble. And that's also a possibility.
Absolutely. But that's a thing we have to plan for. Like, we can't just say, oh, let's not think about it because it might spark troubles, when the Northern Irish Secretary decides, you know what, let's get rid of Northern Ireland and call a border poll. Start to state, like, and what happens if there is a border poll called and that causes troubles?
But I mean, like, do you walk into Lurgan, and Morris's in Lurgan early on, he noticed all the British flags hanging out of people's windows, and say to people, right, down with your flags now, you're part of Ireland, get them down. Yeah. Good luck with that. I mean, let's see how long that lasts. I mean, so that would be grossly unfair on people who identify as British to be suddenly part of a different country.
But this is a potential eventuality like this. And unfortunately, this is something that unionists have to wake up to. They don't want to engage in the discussion. But what could happen is that...
But you're saying unionists have to wake up to. What about nationalists? They have to wake up to some sort of compromise as well.
But the thing is, so this is why we have to have the discussion. If unionists, like, we have to plan for the current situation. If unionists don't want to engage, then we have to plan as best we can for the eventuality that Northern Ireland is reunited with Ireland, and how do we do best to do that? If unionists don't want to engage in the discussion, that's up to them. But that doesn't mean to say we can't plan for an inclusive society.
Okay. All right, just a final word. Sorry, somebody put me in a hole there. Stephen, I'll just give you the final word just on this as a younger person looking forward into the future, I suppose, and that's what we should be focusing on. I don't think it's for old people, and it's generally old people that seem to be debating these. When you look at all these politicians up north, they're all over the age of 60 or whatever it happens to be. I mean, it's not our future, it's your future. I mean, I don't know how old you are, Stephen, but you're a little bit younger than me. And it's the future of young people of Northern Ireland and the future of young people of Ireland. That's what we should be focusing on. They're the ones who need to be involved in that debate, I imagine.
It absolutely is. And like, I'm 34. The Troubles were all when I was a baby.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I've learned the history and I know what's going on. And I was only thinking when the other caller was speaking about, you know, you only have to kind of look at what happened when the British split India and Pakistan. Like, it created a whole massive amount of problems. And the Troubles are the exact same thing. And trying to reunify will create problems. So every caller that says we need to plan about this is absolutely right. The problem is, anytime anyone mentions about a forum or a citizens' assembly or anything like that, the world second ignites again, and you know it's like, well, it's too soon. We can't talk about it. It's just like, sooner or later, the people that are actually talking about it are going to have to actually second talk about it and put up or shut up, one way or another. And we're going to have to just sit down and listen. And we may not like it. People are supposed to be able to disagree with each other, and we'll find a commonality between each other, maybe. Eventually, on most things. But and that's just the way it's going to be.
Stephen,
and I don't see a United Ireland in the next 10 years, but maybe in 20, if we actually started talking about it now, like we should have done 15, 20 years ago.
And that's a reasonable thing to say. And I have to say, for the first time probably in the show in a long time, we actually agree with everything that you've said. I agree with everything that you've said. And it's good to have that commonality as well. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Stephen. I appreciate it. Michael, I appreciate it. Norman, James, everybody else who got involved in that conversation. And even the man from Zimbabwe, who was the first person to call in, who's only here 2 years and realises that we need to do something. Anyway, some of the comments coming in, you'd have to wonder what Ireland 2.0 would actually represent now. Bearing in mind the changes we discussed yesterday, if we had to reboot or relaunch the country, what does it even mean for the Irish? Kevin on WhatsApp. The answer is yes, says Philip Mullins. He said, it always will be yes, and you're not an Irishman if you don't want the island of Ireland to be nothing but Ireland. Eileen says on Facebook, don't know how we can afford it. The 26 we have, or we can't even afford the 26 we have, she says. Let me see, my thoughts are, okay, somebody else says here, why would anyone want to unite with this sad excuse of a government? Another person says, staying within the UK, I believe they're more beneficial due to the current structures in place, even for Republicans. The push towards globalism means that countries, as they currently exist, do not matter. The Republic is more or less under the control of Brussels anyway, and the North are under the control of the UK. Another person says, really, it's a question of which master do you want? That comes in from EJ on WhatsApp. I don't think I'd support a referendum right now either. We've been talking about seeing up committees for years, or getting up committees for years. What has that gotten us to, or where has that gotten us to? Stephen on WhatsApp says, I'm not sure where I stand on unity, but what I do know is not enough in the North want it, so it's not going to happen. And Graham says on WhatsApp, another big point to consider, the PSNI are armed force. The loyalist paramilitaries would dismantle an unarmed police such as the Garda Síochána. How to square that circle in a reunification of Ireland? Are people in Dublin prepared to be London or Belfast in the 1970s? This is their government, or this is the government to be putting out what the case is for peaceful reunification with all issues ironed out prior. I'm sorry, when you're sending in them, try and just do a quick spell check on them so as I can read them properly, because I do want to read them properly for you because it's very important. All right. Thank you very much indeed to everybody who got involved in the show. Don't forget, if you want to watch or listen back to the show, you can go to the website, nileboylan.com. Don't forget, if you are a subscriber on Twitter, you can watch it again in about a half an hour. We'll pop it up onto Twitter. Subscribe. This particular stream will be taken down as soon as the show is over. Remember, it'll always be free to watch, always be free to listen every single day. We're never going to charge you for watching it live or listening to it live, because it's important for us so you can hear and see the show and take part with your WhatsApps and be part of the show. That is really important for us. But remember as well that it costs money to do all this. We don't pay. As you can see, there's no advertising. Do you see any advertising down below me? No, nothing at all. No advertising up there. No, just that one up there, which is for my own show. That's the only ad. So the only way we can make money is asking you to give us a few quid every now and again. So if you get a chance and you can do that, please subscribe on Twitter at the top, up the left up there. Okay, if you just click the follow button and then click subscribe, it'll ask you for the price of a pint once a month. That's all it is. It's actually less than the price of a pint, a fiver. Or you can go to our website and register and you can pay a fiver there as well. And we will have some interesting stuff as the time goes on. We'll have more interesting stuff for people who subscribe as well. So please, I will ask you to try your best to support us, to continue doing what we're doing. Until then, we'll join you again tomorrow at 12 o'clock. Have a good day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.